We're joined by our regular crime writer and reviewer, Angela Savage. Good morning.
Good morning, Michael.
Happy New Year. It's our first time on air this year.
It is.
That was a good premise for a story, wasn't it? A boy's gone missing in a country town, but when the copper starts to look into it, there's no report of a child missing.
It's a fantastic premise. It sucks you right in straight away, which of course is one of the measures or marks of a good crime novel.
Now, I can't help noticing, so this book is called One Boy Missing, the one we've just heard, and the first book you're going to review is called The Lost Girls.
Indeed.
So there's some spooky synergy here. I mean, this is a common idea, isn't it, that Australia is a country of lost children. You remember Peter Pearce wrote a book in, I think it was 1999, which looked at this tradition through Australian literature, right through the colonial period. You know, he looked at, McCubbin's painting Lost of a Little Girl in the Bush. There's Picnic at Hanging Rock, which is later, of course, the 70s story. Marcus Clarke wrote a story about a little boy who gets lost in the book with the improbable name of Pretty Dick. And it seems quite an unfortunate name now, but it seemed to work in the 19th century. But it is a theme, isn't it, lost children?
It is. Probably reflects, I would suggest, a discomfort with the landscape, the fear associated with the wildness of the Australian environment, and possibly a dis-ease about us being here, in a way.
Yes, it's a colonial anxiety that we don't quite belong.
Absolutely. I do think that's a big part of it, and I think that... But plus, of course, it taps into the most primal of fears, of a parent's fears, which is of losing a child. I mean, in terms of grief, it doesn't get much worse than that. It upsets the natural order of things, and I think that combination, it's layering fear upon fear. It's a very compelling kind of narrative.
And fear is what crime writers are looking for.
Absolutely.
What gives you
a
the willies.
A good
thrill. All right, so we've got two books today. One is called The Lost Girls by Wendy James. It's Wendy James's fifth novel. And the other one we'll look at in a minute is a police procedural called Beams Falling, which is the second one from author P.M. Newton, which is a more Asian-Australian sort of book. So let's go for The Lost Girls. It opens in 2010. Set it up for us.
So it opens... It opens and it's told largely, well, it's got a roving point of view, so we get inside the heads of many characters in this novel, but it's essentially about the legacy of a 1978 murder or death of a girl called Angie Buchanan at Curl Curl Beach. And Angie at the time is staying with her cousins, Mick and Jane, both of whom are kind of obsessed with Angie in their own ways. Jane's a little bit younger and she's got that kind of hero worship going along. Mick and Angie are around about the same age. They're young teenagers. And Angie goes missing, and I think she's not missing for very long before her body's found. But as I say, most of the story takes... Well, the story flashes back between 2010 and 1978 to kind of try and flesh out not so much... Not entirely what happened, but the ramifications of what happened for all of the characters in the story. So as well as Mick and Jane, you also hear from their parents, Barb and Doug, who's an ex-cop and is suffering from dementia.
So there's a then and a now.
There's a then and a now.
When the children were young and this happened, and then they're grown up.
That's right.
And then, is this right, someone called Erin shows up who's investigating the crime.
That's right. So there's another part to the 1978 story, which is that Angie's murder goes unsolved for a long time, and it stays unsolved except that a second girl is found murdered in Sydney in identical circumstances, which leads to the theory that there's some kind of serial killer out there who's dubbed the Sydney Strangler, and the Sydney Strangler is never identified. Flash forward to 2010. The wonderfully named Erin Fury, who markets herself as a freelance journalist, contacts Jane through her daughter and starts interviewing the family, the extended family, about what happened back in 1978. And as the story progresses, it becomes clear to us that Erin has more than a kind of passing interest in this story, a deep personal need to pursue this story.
She's not just the journalist she claims to be.
No, she has a vested interest in what's going on. And that adds another kind of wonderful dimension, I think, of tension to the story.
So you call this a domestic thriller?
Yes, and who would have thought we'd ever put the words domestic and thrilling next to each other, Michael? But this is what I think Wendy James does particularly well. She zooms in on the domestic sphere, brings us right into a highly credible extended family setting, and then throws in just enough drama to kind of really set our minds racing about exactly what might happen. Like, it's so credible that you start thinking, not only caring about what's happening to the characters in the story, but wondering, what would I do in those kinds of circumstances? And, you know, I think a lot of crime fiction out there, including stuff that we've talked about on your program, requires the suspension of disbelief. What I like about what Wendy James is doing is that it is utterly feasible and credible, and you really get caught up in that story. You can identify with the characters, the scenarios make sense, and it's the domestic detail, in a way, that highlights and makes it easy to connect with those characters. A little bit like what Stephen Orr was talking about in the previous interview, the observation of the minute and the small, and it's that ripple effect of Angie's death in 78 that's carried through so successfully into the 2010 scenario and into the minds of all those characters.
So, as you were saying, it plays into every parent's fear, because if it has this realistic feel to it, you're not in the pretend world of, you know, Midsummer Murders, where an implausible number of people have been killed.
That's right. And one of the ways that that James does that is that in Jane's character, there's a scene where she talks about her decision to only have one child, which she wouldn't have thought of. But it's in having a child that she identifies with her aunt's loss of Angie and realises how completely her survival depends on another. And it kind of freaks her out, and she basically decides not to have any more children. And I just think that's such a subtle kind of outcome or legacy of that kind of trauma that Jane experienced as a 9-year-old, and yet entirely believable. And that's one of the aspects that I really liked about this story.
Who'd be the readership for this story, do you think?
Look, I think this story will appeal to... It'll be a bit of a crossover novel, so it'll appeal to people who read crime fiction. It's got a really good pace, and it's got puzzles, and it's an unpacking book, and that switching between time frames kind of lends to that. But I think it will also appeal to people who don't normally read crime fiction, because it is a kind of really interesting study in a kind of domestic drama sort of way.
But maybe not if you're a young mum or dad.
Maybe if you don't have a newborn at home, might want to stave off it for a while.
Put it on the shelf and leave it till they've at least gone off to school. This is Books and Arts Daily, and we're reviewing the latest in Australian crime fiction with our regular crime reviewer, Angela Savage. Angela Savage is almost as good a name as, what's her name, Fury?
Erin Fury.
So that's The Lost Girls. Okay, Beams Falling by P.M. Newton. This is her second novel.
It is, and I think this is a really powerful book that's really fundamentally about trauma and its legacy, but it's wrapped up in the guise of a police procedural. As you mentioned earlier, it's a second book involving Detective New Ned Kelly, as she's known on the force. She's the child of an Anglo-Australian veteran and his Vietnamese wife. And in the first book, The Old School, we learn that Ned witnessed the death of her parents, the shooting death of her parents, which has never been solved. And that book is set during the ICAC period. Without giving away too much about the ending of that book, Beams Falling opens with Ned dealing the consequences of having been shot at the end of The Old School. She's paranoid, she's hyper-alert, she's self-medicating with whiskey, she's put on light duties, and she finds herself transferred from her Bankstown station to Task Force Acorn, which is policing Asian crime, quote-unquote. And she's been deployed to boost the number of Asians on the team, even though she doesn't speak Vietnamese or anything like that. Doesn't really identify very much as Asian at all.
So it's tokenism.
It's absolute tokenism. And that's a really interesting kind of dimension of this story. It's set in 1993, which you might remember was when Cabramatta, or Vietnamatta as it was known at the time, was kind of on fire, awash with heroin and gangsters and all of that kind of stuff. And although Task Force Acorn has quite a wide brief, all roads lead to Cabra. And New is there when a 12-year-old schoolboy is shot at point-blank range on the street in broad daylight, and she ends up becoming involved in investigating that death. But her reflexes are shot, and there's actually a siege that she's involved in where she dives for cover and wets herself. And it's at that point where a couple of her colleagues intervene and basically say, get yourself to a counsellor, or we're not going to keep backing you up. You're too much of a liability. And so a significant amount of the book is actually covers News' recovery, her kind of therapy and recovery. And it's a really interesting kind of insight. The the counsellor who she sees, who's called Cynthia, says to her, you know, if you were someone off the street, the counselling strategy would be to reassure you that, you know, people are essentially good and everything will be all right in the end. She said, but you're a cop.
You're a copper.
You know, and the people she deals with are coppers and emergency service workers. So what she's trying to help them find is a new normal. And that's the reference to Beams Falling, which is a line from, or a vignette from Dashiell Hammett's The Maltese Falcon, which, I don't want to give too much away, but that's all about finding a new normal, which is what Ned's challenge is in this book.
So does she stay in the police force?
At the end of the book, she is still in the police force. Mind you, I think that's the only bit of the book I find difficult. I mean, I don't doubt, because the police force are depicted as a highly dysfunctional family in this book, who are held together by nothing but secrets. And whilst I get Ned's dedication, I question how or why she wants to stay somewhere where there's so little light and so little humour to leaven that terrible kind of cynicism and pain that the job seems to cause her. I don't doubt the veracity of the depiction. I mean, PM Newton herself spent 13 years on the job, so I'm sure...
Oh, she knows what she's talking about.
She knows what she's talking about. But I think with both her books, I have found the complete absence of humour quite interesting.
Right.
Yes. Okay. But look, a terrific read. A very atypical crime novel. It's not a fast-paced page-turner. This is a really thoughtful book that, you know, where you sit back and you reflect on what you've just read.
So you like them both?
I do. And in fact, both these books make me feel really positive about where Australian women's crime writing is at the moment, Michael.
Yippee.
Yay.
Angela Savage, thanks for coming in.
My pleasure.
Those books, The Lost Girls, that one's by Wendy James. It's published by Michael Joseph. And PM Newton's book is called Beams Falling. That's a Viking book. Well, that's the show for today. Do pop along to the website and have your say about any of the stories you've heard. And you can also listen to those stories whenever you like. Just listen to them on audio. Just press listen now and it'll all happen.